It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, then. Hopefully this is working. I guess we'll find out. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that wouldn't even exist if that old man had not confused the words antibacterial and antimicrobial. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 197. So yep, that was a critical mistake.
It was, yes. The course of events changed forever. So how are you all doing out there in listener land? They never say.
Well, they're shy, probably.
I think so. For those of you who have never joined us before, welcome. This is the Magical Talking Hat podcast. We call it that because we have a magical hat. It has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And all the good people of the world email that address with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, things like that, that the hat all on its own magically transmogrifies into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. We, its erstwhile savants, draw those note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's a show. We're doing two shows tonight because we're not going to record on Christmas. So,
they just show up in the hat magically.
Magically transmogrified.
Not while you're looking, though. I've noticed that if you look in there, there's cards in there.
Yeah.
But there aren't more cards. You look away, you put it down, you look again, more cards.
Also, if you try and take more than one card out at a time, you lose a finger. That happened to me.
That's right. Tony has 9 fingers.
No,
8 fingers.
I got it back. And I should specify, yeah, it got better. And also, I should also specify that when I say you lose a finger, I don't mean like it eats it off. I mean, you misplace a finger shortly after. I believe it was a few hours afterward that happened. But unquestionably, because I tried to pull out more than one at a time. So watch out for that.
They don't have to watch out for it. Just us.
Just in general, I think if you're dealing with any hats that manifest note cards inside of them, when in doubt, you know.
Or rabbits or anything. One. Whatever the hat manifests.
Rabbits
inside.
That manifest
inside
note
hats.
Cards inside themselves.
That too. They might be very angry about having a note card manifest inside.
Rabbits pooping out note cards, dude. What are we going to do? Start a podcast.
And they'll bite you.
So, how was your week?
Well, let's see.
Ezzy's eating again, so you'll probably find she's a little more chill.
We went to Dave's Corridor Games on Demand again.
Oh, yeah.
It was this past weekend.
What'd you play?
Siron.
Ooh, I've been very curious about Siron.
And I don't remember what the other one's called, but it's in, like, 19th century Utah.
Dogs in the Vineyard?
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't finish that one, but
I heard that one's very interesting as well.
Yeah. It's interesting. And we enjoyed it. And once again, I left.
I know somebody who took Dogs in the Vineyard, the system, and turned it into a Star Wars game.
Oh. As usual, we left with me feeling not very confident in my ability to to do this kind of thing, but, you know, maybe I'm getting the hang of it. I don't know.
This is how you learn. It takes time.
And we finished watching Wonder Woman and...
In your satin tights.
We're glad
fighting
that it,
for your rights.
We're glad that it ended because the... Okay, in when you get the DVD, we don't have them, we got them from Netflix, but apparently on the DVDs, they're going to present to you in the order that they aired.
All right.
But in the last three episodes, the last thing you see is a two-parter. But it really shouldn't have aired last because the third to the last episode has her moving to Los Angeles and the show changing drastically and Lyle Wagner's not her boss anymore and everything like that. And then you watch this two-parter where she's back in Washington and nothing changed.
Yeah.
So presumably that third to last show should have been the last show. And if you treat it as the last show and you take it as the foreshadowing of what the fourth season would be like, no, that was not going to be a good,
dear.
That was not going to be a good season.
All right, then.
Really glad it ended because... It was going to be terrible. But the three seasons they had, you know, they're individual shows that are really problematic. But for the most part, excellent. Linda Carter is wonderful. I mean, she just played the part perfectly. In spite of all the weird, low-budget, goofy things going on, it still seemed like a fun show because of how she played the character, and that was really awesome.
Cool.
So we finished that. We're still playing... Arkham Origins, and it's pretty awesome because it's Christmas there, and you hear Christmas music sometimes while you're beating people up. That's kind of neat. And we saw...
Just like in real life, when you beat people up around this time of year, you can hear Christmas music.
That's right.
And I today heard some Christmas ska music, and I'll tell you right now, I never, ever needed to hear that.
We saw The Giver.
Oh.
It was all right.
I was super uninterested, and I'm still uninterested and don't intend to see it, but I was slightly more interested when I found out that this has been a labor of love for decades for Jeff Bridges. He was, like, really moved by the book and originally wanted to do it with his father in the role he's playing and him in the younger role long, long, long ago.
Yeah.
So that made it a little cooler, but I still...
Well, the book was published 20 years ago, and the other adult in the house read it and liked it, and so was interested in the film. I thought it was okay.
It sounds like they actually stuck, because I went and read up what it was about and then what the movie was about and everything. And other than throwing in a weird sort of romance, because you have to nowadays, apparently, it seems like they stuck pretty well to the actual plot.
Yeah, the problem, though, is that a lot of people have told similar stories in the last 20 years, probably inspired by the original work. And so...
Then it feels derivative.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've run into that.
Which I felt bad about feeling that way while I was watching it, because I knew that back 20 years ago it was probably more groundbreaking or something. So I felt bad for the author and for everybody working on the project, but it just didn't open your eyes to anything.
When I showed Trish... Well, it's a very 70s plot, in my opinion, also.
Yeah,
but when I showed Trish Babylon 5... Which had come out pre-2001, I mean, like pre 9/11 and all that, and at the time was groundbreaking in a lot of ways that were copied like crazy later. It was weird. Periodically, I'd have to pause it and be like, okay, I know this sounds like an old tired trope now, but this was like 10 years ago, and they actually were some of the first people to come up with this.
Well, the great thing about Wonder Woman, too, is that so much of it was such good feminist material. And even now. Now, part of that's sad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Part of that is, this should seem dated when we watch this now. All of the stuff they're doing and the points they're making shouldn't be impressive at all because, you know, this should have been the first show to do some of these things and then it should have just kind of gone from there.
Yeah.
And so that's a little bit sad that you can watch Wonder Woman and think, wow, this is a great, you know, timely feminist message even for today. And then you think, oh, wow, that's depressing. But we saw The Giver, and it was, you know, the performances were good. It was good. And we saw Maleficent.
Ooh, had you not seen Maleficent before?
You told me that nobody should see that movie. I believe is what you said.
People are extremely divided on this movie. People are extremely divided on this movie. And I am very much in the camp opposed to this movie.
All right, well...
People tend to not be in the middle, though. But, and people I respect really liked that movie. So...
Here's where I fall on it.
All right,
later. You might have just first met your person in the middle. Not really in the middle, though, I guess. Okay, let me tell you this. I think if a person goes into this film without really any kind of preconceived notions of any kind, which is impossible, but let's say they do.
Somebody has head trauma.
Yeah.
And then immediately goes to see Maleficent.
I can't see any reason why they wouldn't like it. It's not poorly made. A lot of the criticisms people have about the CGI, I saw one person talk about how the CGI effects made them think of classic Disney films. And that was a criticism. They thought that it wasn't supposed to look like that. I thought it was supposed to look like that. I thought it effectively looked like that. And while it didn't do anything for me, I thought, well, that's kind of a clever thing to do. Why not?
I thought the visual effects were marvelous.
Okay.
All around. Especially the more subtle ones, like what they did with Angelina Jolie and things.
And I
love that. That is certainly not a complaint for me. I mostly have one complaint.
And I liked Angelina Jolie's performance.
I liked
Elle Fanning's performance. I mean,
I would agree.
I can't think of any reason why, unless it's just not your kind of thing, or you have certain, very particular preconceived notions, I don't know why you wouldn't like it. Okay. That said, though, I have preconceived notions, quite a few of them, and I ended up, of course, not liking it. But not hating it. Not thinking it was a travesty or something, just because, you know, and I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but I'll just say that Maleficent... I think if you asked people who know Disney characters and who've seen Disney mm-hmm. movies and whatever, mm-hmm. if you asked them to rate the most memorable and colorful and significant character, and maybe make it specifically about villains if you want, and even put them in categories like the best animated villain, the villain that was the best foil for the protagonist, you know, on all that.
Mm-hmm.
I think pretty consistently Maleficent's going to come out on top of the all-time best villains.
There's a reason why they made a movie about her.
In every single category. And
she's very popular.
Keep in mind, too, that she was not just in Sleeping Beauty. She's been in video games. She's been in other animated features.
Yep.
So she's been, you know, for people who are fans of Disney, she's kind of been out there.
She's probably the most popular Disney villain.
Right. And I don't think anybody, even someone who really liked the film, if you sat them down and you sort of explained Maleficent that way and asked them, okay, taking that all into account, do you think this film really, you know, did fairly by her? I don't think anyone would think so. I you know what I'm saying? This villain is like maybe even beyond Disney, one of the best villains ever. I can't believe you could watch this movie, even like the movie, and say, yeah, it did right by that character.
Okay, well, I don't know another way to talk about this, so I'm just going to spoil the fuck out of this movie.
Well,
it's a Disney movie. You can see it now, whatever, you know. But I would agree with you that I don't think it did well by her. I would not agree with you that everybody believes. Some people found this movie very empowering to her and thought it was very... cool how they... I'm in your camp. I don't feel it did well to the story of Sleeping Beauty. I don't feel it did well to the story of Maleficent. Beyond any of that, I don't enjoy going to a Disney children's film and having it turn out to be a rape revenge movie.
Right.
I really don't enjoy that. I was really kind of ticked off. And beyond that... Some people found it quite feminist and empowering. I found it quite the opposite.
Okay, well...
I found it horribly victimizing and disturbing for no good reason.
Now, you said just a second ago that some people find it a very empowering role for this character. I would... For the character in the movie, but for Maleficent as a character that's beyond this movie, that was showed up in 1959 and has been...
The character in the movie is not Maleficent, let's just be honest.
No, and so, but, and I think if you sat down and you talked to someone, even who liked it, about thinking of Maleficent as bigger than the film, a cultural icon, if you will, that just about everybody recognizes, they'd say, okay, for that Cultural icon Maleficent? No, probably not. For the Maleficent in the film, no. I thought her story was very empowering, and I can understand.
No, see, I still would disagree with that.
Well, but I'm saying some people think that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now, here's the difficulty with that. I mean, there's a lot of difficulties with it, but here is a major difficulty is that from a feminist perspective, there's a lot of complicated things going on here. Things that you've already mentioned, you know, a rape revenge story. Well, some people don't see it that way.
Yeah, those people are fucking idiots.
Well, are they?
It's absolutely 100%.
Now, I don't agree with that perspective myself personally. But then again, I'm not a heterosexual woman who's maybe been through sexual assault, or nobody knows somebody who has or is very concerned about it, even if I haven't, who a heterosexual woman who might feel like if someone does go through something like that, that a story where they come through it with, where they sort of rise above it, where they get through it with the help of another female. Now, and even if the help from that other female is kind of, because this other female is younger, and so it's a matronly kind of feeling that is awoken in them. I mean, to me, there's a lot of stereotypes in there that kind of cancel out, right? It's like, well, she, first of all, you know, and Angelina Jolie in an interview basically said that the writer and she and a few other people sat down and tried to, and thought about, well, what would make Maleficent the way she is? And they came up with what they acknowledged at the time was a rape metaphor.
Yeah.
And, you know, from my perspective and from a broader feminist perspective, that seems pretty obvious and pretty, like, yeah, we aren't, haven't we moved beyond haven't we moved beyond a world where if a woman is an evil person, she has to have been
or
raped?
If a woman is a strong person, this is a
or a creative person
running joke we have when we make characters in our role-playing games is, oh, you made a real strong woman, so where in her backstory did she get raped?
No, right. It's cliche.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I get that.
And it's super insulting.
And then for later.
And it's not as though, for the record, I just want to jump in here for a second. She didn't get violated and rise above it and deal with it. She got violated and retreated to being incredibly cold and villainous and borderline genocidal. And then through an awakening of maternal instincts,
yes,
then overcame it. And
right,
that's
right.
Just full of shit that makes me want to headbutt someone.
No, right, right. I agree. I completely agree. On the other hand, I can understand a woman who can intimately relate to that, and if any woman can relate to that, then that's a story worth telling for that woman. The broader problem then becomes not so much that stories like this are told that appeal to a narrow group of women who feel empowered by it, and that's great. But what about all the women who aren't? What about the women who cannot relate to that?
What about the fucking children? It's a fucking Disney movie.
No, I understand. But the thing is, what I'm finding is that there's something complicated going on in feminism right now where, here's another example. You have, there's a comic book character in DC, Starfire. Does that sound right?
From Teen Titans?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so Starfire is...
I've talked with somebody about this. This is a mess.
She very typically doesn't wear very many clothes.
Yeah.
And DC even thinks they've got a wink-wink clever justification for this because she comes from a planet where nobody wears clothes.
Yeah,
and so, which
yeah.
is ridiculous. And it makes me sick that a lot of male readers think that's so clever.
Yeah.
But anyway, she typically runs around without any clothes. And when they sort of rebooted everything recently in DC...
This is new, by the way. She's never done this before.
When they rebooted everything in DC, they not only have her dressing skimpy like she usually does, but she's fairly sexually aggressive.
Yeah.
And
historically, she was quite the opposite.
Well, I don't remember...
She's very sort of sweet and innocent, naive kind of character.
Maybe. I don't recall that. But regardless, you've got some women who read the comic book who feel empowered by this, because she's sexual, she can wear whatever she wants. If she feels like having sex with a guy, casual sex, she can do that. And you know, in the way the comic portrayed it, it seemed like she was the one with the power in this situation. And so they feel okay with it, and they resent other feminists criticizing it. Now, to me, this is the same kind of thing that's going on with Maleficent.
Oh, absolutely,
in a way,
absolutely.
Where the problem isn't that we've got a character like Starfire doing these things that some women can relate to and feel empowered by. The problem is that outside of that characterization of a female in comic books, we don't have much else.
Yes.
That's the problem. And so, but a lot of times feminists find themselves fighting each other about these things and criticizing each other when, you know, the side that likes Starfire and the way she is, I think it would be better if they were to say, look, I do like Starfire the way she is, but I appreciate that not every woman's going to, and I think DC yeah. needs to do better representing other types of women. And the women who don't like Starfire should say, hey, good on you for having a character you relate to and empowers you. I'd like that too. So why can't we, you know,
well,
get along and get together?
The producer and I just had this talk today. I forget what it was, but it was something with a female trope in movies. And she's like, if we had plenty of the opposite of that also, because that's the thing, guys have that. There are some really terrible male characters out there that I find awful and offensive. There are also some out there that other people find awful and offensive that I kind of like and that I kind of find intriguing
That's
and empowering.
Right. That's right.
But you know what? There's a diversity.
For the most part. I mean,
yeah, Hollywood's still stupid and there's like five types
of
women. But the point is, regardless of my views on masculinity and men's place in society, I can mostly find a character
right.
I can associate
or
with.
Or it's easier for you to do so anyway
absolutely.
Than it is for a woman
absolutely.
To do so. That's absolutely true. So... So, Maleficent, I don't personally think that at the end of it all, when you tally it all up, it's a very feminist story. However, I do understand how it might speak to certain women who have been through certain situations or who have a certain outlook on life. For example, I think it's a relatively select group of women. But it is a demographic that's large enough that you can make a film like that and make a significant amount of money.
Well, but I think most of the people who watched it aren't feminists who found that empowering. I think a bunch of people who watched it just aren't feminists or are blind to a lot of this shit.
Well, I don't know, which
I believe
true.
There are both. But, and we also have to accept the model that is increasingly incredibly poorly named, but I still respect demographic known as post-feminists. This came up recently. I don't know his name, and I'm happy not to know his name. The NFL gentleman who, video was recently released of him beating his girlfriend into unconsciousness in an elevator and dragging her out of it. And so he was banned from the NFL or
okay.
something. It was a thing. A long time ago, they found out he was beating his girlfriend and he got punished. But then recently this footage came out and it's really horrible. And based on that, he's now been banned, and it's been a big controversy because he had already been punished, but now they were punishing more just because there was more footage or whatever. But anyway, the girlfriend in question is now his wife.
Okay.
And she has been interviewed recently.
All right.
And she has said this was an aberrant situation. This does not happen now. We are very much in love. I intend to stay with him. And a lot of people have said this doesn't seem like a healthy relationship. It's quite possible that she's in an abusive relationship and in denial. And everybody's like, okay, up to this point. And then they say, and she needs to get out of it. She should not be there. And a bunch of people say, excuse me? Including people who consider themselves feminist and people who consider themselves post-feminist. Because they say, no, you don't. She is an independent individual and she gets to decide for herself.
Sure.
We might think that's crazy to be in that relationship. And we might think he's a terrible woman-beating monster. But she's a grown-ass woman, and she gets to decide.
Sure.
And there's major controversy over this amongst a bunch of self-identified feminists. And I believe part of this is
when you have the social movement, you put certain constraints and rules. Feminism has been around for decades now. It has established certain things, and there's a generation coming up that has been empowered because of this that now says, I don't have to follow any rules, including yours. I could. There's been a similar debate when feminists debate about pornography. There's a set that says it's demeaning, it's misogynist, and it should be gone. And then there's another set that says I can do whatever I want because I'm a human being entitled to do that as long as I'm not hurting anybody else, and that includes doing porn, and that includes consuming porn. And this is where the debate tends to lie. And I agree the same thing is here. And when I say nobody should see Maleficent, I am being glib. I don't think the movie should not have been made. I don't think anybody should be arrested for it. I don't think North Korea should hack the studio and say, if you release this, we will do terrorist attacks on movie theaters, as is apparently happening with a dumbass Seth Rogen, James Franco film. I just think it's terrible. And I think it's terrible as a story about the character Maleficent. I think it's terrible as a children's movie. And I think it was quite unenjoyable just as a movie for me to go watch.
Yeah, I can't say that I enjoyed it very much either.
But it was gorgeous.
I mean, I thought Angelina Jolie was entertaining. But my own personal feeling is that the overall feminist message was, you know, to a broad audience of men and women was not positive.
There's also some arguments over certain socialist messages in it, too, which I found vaguely intriguing, not enough that I'm not sorry I saw it.
No, but I've heard about those, too. But for the select group of women and young women who, for whom it resonated and who were empowered by it, I get that. That's fine. And that's probably why it got 72%
Metacritic?
On Rotten Tomatoes. Which is comparable to Iron Man 2, how Iron Man 2 performed. Even though the critics were like 50% panned it.
Yeah.
But most of those criticisms were, this is trite and derivative. Well, of course it was trite and derivative. I mean, I don't, you know.
Yeah.
That's like calling a red sweater red, as far as I'm concerned. But it did very well. It made a lot of money. And it's probably that demographic, which is usually the demographic that films try to go for, unfortunately, as if no other type of woman exists.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate, too. But I don't want to take anything away from those women who did feel empowered by it. I get that. I can see how that's true. But I hope they see that there's a lot of women, probably, you know, especially women of color or women of a different socioeconomic status than the demographic that was targeted, who might not have felt that empowered by it. And there are a lot of reasons that a woman might not have felt empowered by it, because it was using tropes and stereotypes and everything that were a little bit... I mean, when Angelina Jolie talked about it based on what I read in their interview, I mean, to her it just sounded like, oh, yeah, of course, there's going to be a rape metaphor in here. And, oh, her maternal instinct's going to kick in and save her. Like, that's the obvious thing to happen. Well, it is the obvious. It's the obvious stereotypical thing to happen.
And Angelina Jolie doesn't exactly have a common experience. Like, her entire life doesn't exactly mirror the majority of women in this country or anywhere.
That's right, but it surprises me that anyone today thinks that that's a creative solution to the plot problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not. I mean, I suppose it was creative in that it was metaphorically shown. And she actually did a very effective and moving job in responding
incredibly. That was almost kind of the problem. She did too well. Yeah. I was like, this is horrifying to
but,
me.
But, you know, I would, what I thought was going to happen, what I was kind of excited to see happen was, I'm not going to really be giving anything away here because it's right at the beginning of the movie, but she's kind of a guardian of that part of the, there's two.
I do love.
Two worlds.
The one with
men that has a king, and the other world has no king or queen because they trust each other. I love that.
And she's a lovely little fairy girl named Maleficent.
Yeah, that part doesn't make
sense. That's hilarious to me.
But she's sort of the guardian of this little area, and that's really neat. And I thought maybe something, the metaphor they'd use is like environmental destruction or something, and that would make her angry.
Yeah.
And
nope, rape.
Well, and also when she goes to curse a little baby, there's got to be some kind of narrative connection there that wasn't there in this case. Like, why would... I mean, except that she's petty and jealous of the queen and stuff, which is really horrible. But But if it was like an environmental...
The queen, the complete non-character, yeah. You mean. The prop known as the queen.
Yeah, yeah. But the...
The Good Fairies, purely slapstick comedy.
Right.
Which was a waste of the characters and a waste of the actresses.
But if it'd been... Yeah, that's true. But if it had been like an environmental destruction thing, and she'd made a point, like, what you destroyed was pure and innocent and good, and you're not going to understand what I've lost until you lose something pure and innocent.
That would at least have been a thing.
Then that there's a thing, right. And then from that point on, if it pretty much was exactly the way the film was and how it unfolded and how things changed, then it would seem more meaningful. It would seem more dramatic rather than here is a woman who experienced a horrible experience, then got kind of petty and catty about it. I mean, not even...
Yeah.
I mean,
all okay because the man was so horrific.
No, I know that.
We can excuse all of that.
But see, that's another problem I had with it was here's this thing that was supposed to be a metaphor for rape, even by her own admission, and she responded by being petty and catty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's what women do, right? Yeah. When they're scorned, they act like that.
Right.
I mean, yeah, exactly. It was ridiculous.
Also, between this movie and Elysium, I think I just don't want to see Sholto Copley in anything. I enjoyed him in District 9, kind of. I enjoyed him in A-Team, kind of. But between these two movies, I'm like, I just can't afford to watch a movie that he's in because he plays monsters and he plays them effectively and I don't like seeing it.
What discourages me about this, though, is that this film could be an opportunity for people to have a conversation about these things, and instead it's the argument crops up between feminists about whether or not it's a feminist film or empowering or not, and then that just draws everybody out of even thinking about feminist themes, and that's too bad. And I understand why there's an argument. Don't get me wrong. I'm not being judgmental towards feminists on either side, but I do think if they thought about it for a little while, they'd realize, hey, it's okay for some women to feel empowered by this film, but it's also okay for other women to notice the real problems where a woman might not feel empowered by this film and have a conversation about that with the greater culture so that they can start understanding a feminist principles.
I just keep being amazed that people, I don't even mean validate the other side, but can't see it. Like, people who like the movie don't get why people don't like it and vice versa.
Well,
and I'm like, really? Because I really don't like that movie. I still get what the people who like it are saying. I just disagree vehemently.
Exactly.
But I understand. Like,
another example is Taylor Swift apparently recently made some feminist comments or whatever. And, you know, has aligned herself with feminism and said some feminist things, what have you, which a lot of people are feeling pretty good about. You know, here's a popular person in pop music, I guess, that a lot of teenage girls especially look up to, and she's a feminist, and she's saying things that are in line with feminist values. That's great. But then other people come along and they say, but all your songs are about boys and about how they broke up with you and all this stuff. Okay, that's true, but this is a concern for some women, some young women especially, and is that a particularly feminist concern? Well, probably not, but, and does that speak for all women and all feminists? No.
Well, does that speak for her entire life? I mean, what's she gonna... Also, and here's the thing, because I like to bitch about Taylor Swift dating all these boys and writing songs about them as much as anybody, but I'm going to guess, having never heard a whole album of hers, that the single about breaking up with John Mayer or whoever is out there, probably most of the rest of the tracks are not also about breaking up with boys. But the big thing is, what's she going to say? You guys are right. I guess I'm not a feminist.
Well, one person made the point that she's talking about these things. You know, these are her real thoughts and feelings on this stuff. What do you want her to do? Not talk about it? How feminist is that? To tell this girl to shut up about her experiences?
Yeah.
But again, it's a very similar kind of thing where what I think we have to realize is that women, first of all, women are oppressed in our culture. That's why we need feminism. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
And there's such a thing as white privilege.
But yes. But, and because that's true, what you just said, not all women are oppressed the same way.
No.
And so feminism is going to have to, you know, women are going to take feminism in as an ideal and try to express that ideal in different ways, and they're all perfectly valid in the good ways. We don't have to all be doing it the same way to be on the same wavelength in terms of and wanting women to be treated like equal human beings.
In the early days of feminism in this country, I mean, it was harder because of social positions, but in terms of goals, it was much simpler. We want the right to fucking vote. We want the right to fucking be able to not wear skirts everywhere. You know, things like this. Own property, also a good one. And so, and it was, they were hard fights, but everybody could, like, you've got your protest group. We all know what we want. The vote, you know, very straightforward. And as certain milestones get hit, then you separate more. Because now you get the next tier of what things you want. Well, and not everybody wants the exact same thing.
The thing is, though, when the vote was achieved in 1920, already some women said, we're done.
And other, there you go. And there you go.
Alice Paul and a lot of people who were with her said, no, we're not done.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about that. A lot of critics of feminism will put forward an argument much like you've just said. I mean, not for the same reasons or the same kind of thinking. I'm not saying you're saying what these guys say. What I'm saying is they'll say something like, well, feminism used to be like the right to vote stuff, and these feminists today, they don't have any connection to those suffragists who really were fighting for something good. And of course, they're just expressing their own ignorance, because right there in the Seneca Falls Convention in 1848, in a list of sentiments that was kind of a declaration of independence, if you will, of women saying, these are our grievances against men and what they do to us. A lot of them did mention things like owning property and things like that. Which, and by the way, when the Seneca Falls Convention started to sort of wrap up and decide, well, what are we going to kind of demand from all of this?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people there, many of them the women, thought that asking for the vote would be too much. It's Frederick Douglass, actually, that stood up and gave a speech about it that kind of got everybody to think, yeah, that's what we really want to aim for. But the very last sentiment listed in the sentiments talks about how men have disrespected us and have tried to get us not to respect our own selves. And if you read that particular sentiment, you notice that this thing is not about something that can be created through law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is about men respecting women. You can't make a law that says men have to respect women. No.
It's a cultural issue.
That's right. And that's present from the very beginning. Okay, and this is in fact, that's why Alice Paul had such a disagreement with all the women who wanted to give up once the vote was achieved, because she knew that, and a lot of other women knew that too. Now, actually, the women who quit knew that too, but they just thought the vote would fix everything.
Yeah.
They thought that...
Because they could vote for what they wanted.
Yeah, they could vote for what they wanted and vote people out who didn't do what they wanted. They didn't realize that, you know, we can imagine a world where 50% of the people in Congress are women. We can imagine a world where 50% of the CEOs are women and they're getting paid the same as men. We can imagine that world. And yet still in that same world, the female political candidates have to dress in a certain way and the men don't. And the female CEOs, to climb the ladder, had to be careful about how ambitious and bossy they were while the men didn't. So in other words, even when all that civil stuff gets sorted out and we get parity, women still might be treated like less than human beings.
Absolutely.
So it's not just a civil rights issue. It's a broader cultural, social issue.
It's a hegemony, and this is something that a lot of people don't grasp the concept of hegemony, that certain things are taken on unconscious faith without us realizing that there are certain assumptions we make every day that sometimes we don't even realize we've made the assumption, or sometimes we think it's just common sense.
No, you're right.
That's tied up into all this, and why it's institutionalized. And so the next day, everybody can vote, including all the women who slightly outnumber the men, but because of all of these assumptions on behalf of both the men and the women, all of these things happen. Some of them on purpose, to purposely subvert these kind of things. Mm. Some of them just because that's how we're all raised and we don't even think about it.
Yep, yep.
And so a surprising number of this new 50% don't vote in ways that are going to necessarily improve their lot, or at least improve the lot of all women on equal footing. And so many people who don't consider themselves feminists don't consider themselves feminists because they have no idea what feminism is.
Seems to be true. Well,
They'll say, I believe men and women are equal, but I'm not like a feminist. And I'm like, oh my God.
You used the perfect example last time when you were talking about that song, Baby, It's Cold Outside.
The date rape song? Yeah.
Because that's played over and over and over again around the holidays like it's nothing. But there's actually a point in the song that I didn't even notice until recently where he says, put some records on while I pour your drink. And then a couple lines later, she asks, what's in this drink?
He's drugged her.
Well, yeah. Now, one of the reasons I didn't pick up on that is because I've heard that joke my whole life, like on TV and movies and stuff. Wow, what's in this drink? You know, people say. Do they always mean that? Because when people would say that on TV and movies and stuff, I've always thought, it looks just like a beer. They don't know it's a beer, or what they can't tell by tasting it, what's in it. I never could understand that expression.
The implication was that, this is really strong.
Well, sometimes I thought that. Sometimes I thought that too. But usually, a lot of times, it didn't look like a cocktail or something that was mixed. Yeah, it looked like just like, you know, one thing.
I think it depends more on the context. But
do you think it ever means, like in the song, what do you think it means?
That's how I interpret it in the song. And the funny thing is that's how I've always interpreted that in the song, going all the way back to when I was in high school and we performed it in jazz choir. And it wasn't until sometime after college, after all of my fucking gender studies stuff, that I suddenly realized, holy shit.
Here's the thing.
And the same thing with Santa Baby. Oh,
take Baby It's Cold Outside in the most innocent way you can possibly take it. And it's still a song about a guy pressuring a woman to stay there, clearly for sex.
Yeah,
you cannot escape that. I don't care how innocent you want to make. Now, the people who will acknowledge that and say, yeah, but you know, that's how men and women interact. That's just, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Is that people think that's normal.
That is normal, and that's a problem that it's normal.
Yeah, that's not okay.
And I always love doing where you switch the scenes around in movies. That's a big one for me. Is, well, and the one I always do is my super ex-girlfriend, which is a terrible comedy film.
Yeah, you've mentioned this one before.
And if you switched it around, it's a terrible horror film.
That's right.
Because suddenly it's met. And there's so many things like that where I'm like, switch the genders. How does it look now? If it looks substantially different, then something's going on.
Here's another thing.
It doesn't even have to be better or worse. If it's a whole different story just by switching the man and the woman in it, that tells you something.
Here's another thing that bothered me about Maleficent that has kind of bothered me about this concept in general is, so sleeping, or Aurora's lying there asleep.
Yes.
And the fairies are trying to get him to kiss her. Okay. This is non-consensual contact between this guy and this.
But it's hilarious because the women are making the man do it.
Well, now, I know a lot of people might think that's no big deal, but you know, you can pretty much thank Disney for this first love's kiss business. I mean, it's not as much in Grimm as people tend to think it is, and it should disturb people a lot more because you've got Snow White, you've got Sleeping Beauty, both instances where this guy is kissing this girl in a situation where she can't possibly consent to it. Now, again, a lot of people think, kissing is no big deal, but come on.
Well,
what message are you sending?
And it's been taken to that extreme. Anne Rice, under a pseudonym, wrote a really impressive hardcore BDSM pornography series based on the Sleeping Beauty story. That begins with the prince coming and giving her true love's kiss, except it's not a kiss. He literally just rapes her to wake her up. And the story goes from there. And the thing is, and I'm not faulting Anne Rice for this, it's porn, you know? It's a fantasy story, there's weird shit going on all over the place. My point is, it was a real easy jump in the metaphor. It was real easy to say,
we're just taking
this to another level.
I know a lot of people think not, but it seems like that to me. And
to be fair, though, they did replace it with True Love's forehead smooch, which was pretty lame.
Who did?
Maleficent.
Well, movie. But not with the guy.
No, I know, but still, okay. True love's kiss was a goddamn smooch on the forehead from your surrogate mom. That's
right,
just weird.
All right, but isn't that interesting? Why couldn't she kiss her on the lips?
Oh no, can't do that.
Because that's true, because she can't do that, that means that the kiss from the guy was more than just a kiss.
Absolutely.
So any argument that, oh, it's just a kiss, no, it's absolutely more than just a kiss, because if it wasn't, she could have done it too. Now,
yes.
here's the thing, though. Like, in The Giver...
Jeff Bridges kisses everybody.
No, you talked about how they added a romance in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, it wasn't so much they added it as that they elaborated on it.
Yep.
And there's a point where the boy's kind of awakened to how things are going, but the girl's not. And if you don't know the story, nobody, spoilers here, nobody in the community has emotions or would know what love is or anything like that. And he kisses her, which is really the same thing. He doesn't ask her permission. He knows she couldn't possibly understand what this is about, but he's just going to do it for whatever reason. Again, not cool. Really not cool. And it just made me realize how much our culture is okay with men doing that. In fact, some women are trained to expect men to do that, because if a man does that, then that means he really cares, and that's what you're supposed
just
to do.
Just like yesterday, I believe, I said the phrase to the producer that I'm saying to you now, that's why we call it rape culture.
Yeah.
Because what that means that people don't realize, and this is why I came up here, is a whole bunch of things that really are non-consensual sexual activity our society has determined are not, are normal, are fine.
Yeah.
But they're not. That's what they are.
And they think it's harmless or if anyone
natural,
said...
Natural.
Yes, natural. I know a lot of people who, if they heard this conversation, would be completely angry and would make a YouTube video about how it's, of course you can kiss a girl, you know, shouldn't have to fill out a form in triplicate to find out if I need to kiss a girl, as if that's what we're saying. No, we're not saying.
Well,
maybe ask.
Let's do it this way.
What's wrong with that?
Let's do it this way. Mr. YouTube dude, who based on the character William has created, appears to be a heterosexual male. What about if
really
a dude came up and kissed you like that? Because he liked you.
Yeah, and you're still a dude.
How would you feel
about
that?
Yeah, that's right.
That?
That's right.
See?
Exactly.
And if that's not okay, then what the hell makes it okay?
That's right. That's
the other way.
Right.
And this was the thing I constantly tried to explain to my homophobic friends in school. They'd be like, how can you hang out with a gay guy? Aren't you worried that he's going to, like, rub up on you and stuff? Which somebody literally said that.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't know how to explain it because I was like, are you worried that girls will rub up on you? No, that doesn't count because you would probably love that. So I'm like, what's an equivalent?
You could ask, are girls in danger of being rubbed?
Are
you going
to
do this to girls?
To girls?
Surely
well, that also might not have worked
because
they were like 12-year-old boys.
Oh,
so they might have been like, yeah, that'd be awesome.
That's gross.
But that's the thing. I'm like, if it doesn't work that way, that should tell you something about what you're doing. We are almost out of time and haven't touched anything.
And you didn't talk about your week.
No, I'm going to talk about my week next week.
On Christmas.
Because we got to. Exactly. Christmas. It's a miracle. I do want to pause, though, to say, because this was going to be part of explaining my week, and now I'm not, but I just want, in case people have heard it, or in case people notice that I'm getting sillier, I am currently drinking. I am drinking something called 18 Mile Ale, which is a rye pale ale. From the 603 Brewery in New Hampshire that was given to me today as a gift. So I decided to drink it throughout these two episodes and see what the fuck happens. And I drink so little alcohol these days that this could get really interesting.
On Christmas.
Yep.
All right, let's draw at least one then. You didn't have to do that.
I did. It was stuck in there.
The hat is over there. I can't reach you without your help.
I know. That's why you keep me around.
That's why I keep you around. He's staggering. How many hats do you see? All right.
I see none. How weird is that?
Oh, we don't have time for this one.
Ooh. Lay it on me.
Please tell an untrue but epic story of how you first met.
I had recently been shot. By a squirrel. It's the only time I've ever seen a squirrel with a shotgun. No, I lie. It's one of only two times I've seen a squirrel with a shotgun. But this was the only time I got shot by the squirrel with a shotgun.
Although you hadn't just been... You had gotten shot.
I had gotten shot a while ago, yeah. And I was laying in a ditch...
Right.
Lamenting my death at the hands of a shotgun-toting squirrel, because I was only 12. And then I heard the hoofbeat of a horse, or at least what I thought was a horse, turned out to be a particularly enthusiastic moose.
Because you were up in, like, northern Minnesota.
Yes. Of course.
Or Alaska. No, yes. Wait, where were we?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
I had been shot. I don't know what your excuse was.
Somewhere where there were moose. Not here in Iowa, though.
Astride the moose, complete with full saddle and tack and bridle, which I had never seen before and have never seen since, wearing what I can only best describe as kind of if... A mentally challenged boy made his own Royal Mountie uniform.
Well, you see, there was a
kind of
there was a TV show,
yeah,
that was on around the noon time where this person did crafts and like a kid. If you were a kid, you could watch.
Oh.
Like one time she taught you how to make a cardboard old timey telephone and stuff. So anyway, she had us make. One thing she had us do, well, I mean, she was on TV, but it was like a pith helmet.
Okay.
And I thought, hey, I could be a Mountie.
There you go.
And so I...
Like the Mounties are with their pith helmets.
Well, kind of. It is little like a pith helmet, right? I mean, I knew it wasn't exactly like that. I knew that.
Yeah.
But that's why it didn't look quite right, because I had to... I started with a pith helmet, and I altered it to be the... That's why it looked like that.
And yeah, riding up, and...
And you would not believe what it took. Because, you know, a typical bridle doesn't fit in a moose. So.
No.
So I really had to work that out.
And
I later found out that Mounties don't ride moose.
No. But I'm glad you didn't find out at the time.
I was misinformed about that.
Because I don't know that we could have done this with a horse. Because luckily he had the typical setup on the back of his moose with a winch, with the electric-powered winch. And so he hooked it up to me, and we dragged me out of the ditch.
Yeah, the saddle came with
got
it.
Me.
I didn't...
Okay.
I don't know how I found a saddle with a winch, but...
That's... see, to me, that's standard on most moose I've seen.
Really?
The winch, not the saddle.
Oh. What, so you know what? I don't think I ever told you...
Option.
I don't think I ever told you how I actually found you.
No.
Okay.
I assumed it was happenstance.
No, it was not.
Oh.
Because... here's the thing. When the squirrel shot you, well, you know, of course, it's a shotgun. It had quite a bit of kick.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't much of the squirrel left. I mean, it looked like the squirrel actually got shot by the shotgun.
Nice.
So here was a shotgun with squirrel remains
bits
around it. And I thought, this is weird. Someone shot this squirrel and then dropped the shotgun next to where the rest of the squirrel is lying.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, maybe I could follow the squirrel guts, basically, to wherever the person was who owned the shotgun. And
to return the...
Well, I don't know. You know, it was just something... It's snowy, and, you know, it's...
So you
can see the blood and guts and the snow really easy. So I followed it, and then, of course, I found nothing. But then I just kept going that direction,
and
I found you.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't much further. I mean, shotgun range isn't that great.
That squirrel went a long ways.
Yeah.
You know.
I got to say, actually, this gives me a little bit of sense of closure, because I've always had... I mean, I'm not a revenge kind of person, but I've always a little bit, you know, been annoyed that he got away with it.
Oh, wow, it never even occurred to me.
I feel a little better. And I feel a little bad that I feel a little better.
Because the squirrel was, like, destroyed?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, but there's some peace of mind there.
I certainly know,
like, he's not coming after me again now, which is nice.
Because when I saw you, I was just so concerned about your safety.
Well, yeah.
And then, you know, later when you said something about being shot by the squirrel, I guess I didn't really put two and two together that much to tell you, oh, I know what happened to that squirrel.
It
just never occurred to me to tell you until just now.
I'm okay with that. But I am glad to know now.
Okay.
But
you were in bad shape.
I was.
I mean, he winged you, but you felt really... You were in shock, and you felt really bad about it.
And it was, I believe, because at the time, it's all kind of a blur, but I believe you said it was about 276 miles to civilization.
Wow.
And I didn't, I was bleeding out, and so, I mean,
well,
we had to hurry.
You, you were bleeding. I don't know if you were bleeding out.
I mean, and I remembered.
It was mostly a flesh wound, really. Well, but I mean,
it stung.
I know
it stung really bad.
You were really concerned about it. I know.
Yeah.
I know that. And so I knew that I had to.
It was an epic flesh wound. Definitely.
But so, and it's a good thing I had a moose because, you know, I could get you up there.
All terrain.
And I could, and it took a long, it wasn't quite that far. I probably exaggerated a little bit, just like you exaggerated a little bit about your wound.
270.
And,
miles.
Got you to, well, I wanted to take you to an ER, you know.
Yeah. But, no, I assumed it was Canadian practice to take you to the St. Bernard dog and have him do the first. Is that not how it normally is in Canada?
Well, see, the thing
is, I assumed that was.
You. I don't know if you passed out or just fell asleep.
Eh.
But the first
frequently, place that's a difficult thing to determine with me.
But because again,
especially when I was younger,
you weren't bleeding that
12.
Much, so I didn't think you had actually like lost consciousness. But you were crying a lot, so I thought maybe you fell asleep.
I tire myself out.
And
sometimes
so the first place that I really stopped, the first place we came to, it was a hobo jungle, and
of course it was.
They didn't. They weren't very helpful.
No,
and I just didn't like the look that we got from them. So I left there, and that's when, you know, we found the dog, which I told you it was a St. Bernard. I don't know if it
wasn't.
No, I don't. Well, it might have been. It was just a big dog. But
yeah.
I wanted to say something because I knew you'd watch the same cartoons I had.
Yeah,
and you remembered that St. Bernard has a little thing. And I thought, okay, I'll tell him that's what it is.
Yeah.
Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know.
Well, and the important thing is he did really good with the surgery. I mean,
well, yeah.
Whatever breed, he was clearly a doctor.
Well, you see, that's another thing, is you weren't awake for that part of it.
Well, no, it's surgery.
No. I mean, when you talked to him or when we were talking to the doctor,
yeah.
The instruments he had did not come from a barrel around his neck or whatever.
Okay.
And you know how in the cartoons he makes you a martini
whatever.
We didn't have, you know, I was hoping you wouldn't notice that he wasn't going to make you a martini. The stuff that he used in the surgery was some implements I'd kind of pocketed from the hobo jungle.
Really?
Yeah.
How is it that he was so well trained with them?
I don't know. He didn't.
So pure. That's like a miracle. Like.
Well, I suppose it was kind of, yeah.
If I had known this, you know, 25 years ago.
You might have been more impressed?
Well, no, my whole spiritual worldview might be. I mean,
well, it, you know, it did give you an infection, so, which actually was probably worse for you than the actual wound ever really could have been. If we just left it alone and not tried to take out any of the buckshot, because there wasn't very much in there, you probably would have been better off.
But I mean, I didn't die.
No.
You're saying I wouldn't have died anyway.
Well, you got pretty sick. I mean, you know, you had a fever and stuff. That didn't come from the getting shot. That came from how, you know, the knife and stuff that I got was, like, dirty, and I didn't do anything to sterilize it or anything. Actually, the dog licked it off, and he told me that, you know, dog saliva is sterile or something, and I believed him, and that was just stupid. I shouldn't have believed that.
All right, I feel like we're now situated back in my cynical worldview I do have now.
I know
well,
that
so.
I know that people are figuring out that we haven't really talked very much about this since that
day.
And it's kind of, maybe it's a bad thing that we got this card, because there's probably a reason we've never talked
about
it.
No, see, I feel like this is okay, because now I feel like my years of sort of misanthropy are justified. I mean, I always, what prevented me from really sort of despising humanity and dogmanity, I guess, as a whole, was this one, you know, shining example of altruism. And now I realize that's not what was going on.
Really. No, not really. I mean, I was pretending to be a Mountie. You looked hurt. I thought, wow, what a great opportunity this is for me
to. Yeah, how epic.
Because, you know, I was play acting, and you looked like you were hurt, but not like ready to die or something. So you basically just kind of got caught up in my play world. I wasn't really that, honestly, got concerned about you personally.
This has been the incongruity in my otherwise dark view of the universe. And well, now it makes sense. I mean, it was all just a joke.
Not a joke. It was play. A child's being playful.
A little game.
A game, yes. A game. But,
you
know, when you got sick and feverish, you had, you saw things. And
I saw things.
And I thought that maybe that was a good thing. You know, maybe you would get something from that and forget about being shot by the squirrel. And that's why I didn't talk about it very much.
Didn't happen.
But you remembered all that.
Huh? Yes. I send a card to Dr. Barksley every year. And now I don't even know if the address is right. I mean, I don't even know who's getting those cards.
I didn't know you sent Dr. Barksley.
Is that even his name? I mean,
well, first of all, no. I called him that, but I was, like I said, it was just a game to me. I just made it up. And besides that, a year later, he got hit by a snowmobile. He's not been with us for a long time. I don't know who's been getting your cards.
Dr. Bark? Wow. All right, we're over time. Let's just...
Dude, I'm really sorry. I had no idea.
Have a happy holidays.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.